Welcome to the Perspectives on Healthcare podcast, where members of the medical community from different roles, venues, and locations share their unique perspectives on quality healthcare, its future, and how to improve it. Now, from the Your Keynote Speaker studio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here is your host, Rob Oliver.
Thank you and welcome. Today's perspective comes from Denise Grzynski. She is a nurse practitioner who works with genomics and risk assessment. She is based in Texas. She is a member of Generation X. Denise, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob. I'm happy to be here.
Wonderful. So tell me a little bit about yourself and your role in healthcare, please.
So I have had a varied role in healthcare. I started out as a nurse, as a lot of nurse practitioners do. I worked in emergency room medicine. Then I graduated with my master's degree in nursing with a degree in family nurse practitioning. And I worked for Carnival Cruise Lines for a while out on board ships as a nurse practitioner. I worked for the Narragansett Indian Health Center in Rhode Island. I worked in emergency rooms with my NP as well. I've worked in rural health. I've taught for community colleges of Rhode Island, and now I work in an internal medicine practice. And I'm actually based out of Central California. I do a virtual practice from Texas.
Okay, so how did you end up in Rhode Island, if I might ask?
I decided I loved to travel, and so when I came off the cruise ships, I lived in Miami Beach for a couple of years. And then I had a friend who was working as a traveling nurse. Her husband was finishing up a nurse anesthetist program there in Rhode Island. And she said, you don't like the summers down there anyway. Why don't you come up here? And ended up there for 2 years.
Wonderful. Well, listen, part of the goal of the podcast is to get representation from all 50 states. So Rhode Island is one that we have not heard from yet. So we can check that one off the list for you.
All right.
And I appreciate you doing that. So what does quality healthcare mean to you?
To me, it really means looking at the patient as a whole person, their psychological health, their physical health. So their mental health, their physical health, their family is incorporated in that, and partnering with the patient to get to them to the highest state of health that they can achieve.
Okay. Talk to me. You said partnering with the patient. Can you tell me a little bit more about that concept, please?
I certainly can. I love patient education. That is what I really enjoyed about being a nurse. And it's why I went back to get my master's degree and to become a nurse practitioner. So my patients are already aware of the fact that my time actually usually ends up taking a bit longer for each patient, and they may have to wait on the other side, because I want you to fully understand what everything means, what I'm looking at, what I'm thinking about, what I'm looking at, and why I'm making the recommendations that I'm making. And then ultimately, as a patient, you get to decide what is best for you.
What a novel concept, empowering the patient with the education necessary. So it sounds to me like you've got this thing going both ways, in which quality healthcare is something that looks at the patient holistically. So you want to make sure that you are educated about the patient. And then you're also trying to make sure that the patient is educated about what you're saying. So you both want to make sure that you properly understand what's coming from the other side. Am I properly characterizing that?
You definitely are. I remember in nurse practitioning school hearing from one of my professors that you learn an awful lot about a patient and where they're at by just listening to the patient. You know, that goes all I've been teaching my young children. We have two ears and one mouth so that we listen more and speak less. And I think that the same applies for us as providers. If we really listen to our patients, we can understand better what their goals are, and understanding what those goals are can help us come to a better decision together in that partnership.
Yeah. And what you said there, you're coming to a decision together. And in that way, it sounds like it's a mutually agreeable plan of care that hopefully is getting them towards what their goals are. Okay. Can you give me an example of quality healthcare?
I think that not putting Band-Aids, hopefully not, we do some of that, right? Healthcare is about the fact that sometimes we're behind the eight ball. But for me, an example of that is the preventative medicine, making sure that we're trying to catch things earlier so that we can prevent the bigger problems later. So when you have an elevated blood sugar, I'm going to check your A1C right away to see where that's at. And if you're pre-diabetic, we're going to have that conversation. And if you're not, we're still going to have that conversation. And it really, the genomics that you mentioned earlier, I just graduated a couple weeks ago from the City of Hope's Cancer Genomics Risk Assessment Program. So I'm now able to bring that to my patients as well. We can look and talk about your family's past medical history. And if you qualify under the current guidelines, I can actually test you for any genetic markers that might put you at higher risk for certain types of cancer. And I feel like that's another piece of quality care. I may not be able to prevent cancer from showing up, but I can helpfully help us do earlier detection screenings, help you understand the best way to manage your risk. And that includes lifestyle. I talk about lifestyle and cancer risk reduction with that as well.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit more about that idea of, you know, lifestyle change as it goes with that checking for gene markers and so on. Talk to me about how all that works together, if you don't mind.
I don't. It can take quite a couple of visits even with patients. So let's see if I can boil it down into a nutshell. You know, we all know our regular things for women getting their mammograms, men getting prostate screenings, however that looks, because that keeps transitioning a little bit as well. Bone density screenings, colonoscopies. It's now at age 45. We want to start screening colonoscopies. I look at the genetics piece as just an additional piece in that puzzle. That means that if you have a lot of cancer in your family of certain types, certain types of cancer are potentially higher risk for genetic mutations that again put you at higher risk for cancer. 5 to 10% of those might be genetically related. A lot of them are sporadic. And sometimes there's a familial risk that doesn't have a mutation. So there's a lot of different multifactorials that go into that. But what you can do as a patient is you can work on the risk factors that you have control over. You don't have control over where your genetics are. You don't have control over what your family's history is. We might do earlier screenings. There's some things we can do to mitigate in that area. But what you do have control over is losing 5 to 10% of your body weight decreases your cancer risk. Not smoking. Smoking is one of the highest risk factors for getting cancer of all types. Getting the right amount of exercise, eating your fruits and vegetables. They're looking at vitamin D and omega-3s as being complementary to helping reduce cancer risk, possibly related to inflammation. So there are some things that you have control over that we can talk about. So lifestyle things that you can do to help decrease your risk.
Okay. And I want to go back to something you said earlier when you're talking about quality healthcare, looking at the person holistically. When you're doing the genomic sequencing and you're looking at the risk factors that are there, how do you deal with people or, you know, approach people who don't necessarily have cancer? They just know that they have, they have a tendency towards that, or they've got a genetic predisposition towards it. And now it's going to have a major impact on them psychologically, even though they don't necessarily have that diagnosis yet, or may never have that diagnosis. Can you talk a little bit about the interplay with the psychological side of things and people dealing with diagnoses that they don't necessarily have yet?
Well, and that's a really good point that you make, because that's actually a conversation I have prior to even doing the genetic testing with a patient. Because some patients, and I've had a few patients that say, you know, I think it's better for my mental health to not know. I think it's important, and I'm able to pull out some diagrams too to show people what the general population's risk are of a specific cancer, what the familial history risk is of cancer, and then if you have a genetic mutation, what that risk raises you to for a potential risk. But like even with breast cancer, that's, I think it's between 40 and 84% or something like that. If you have a mutation, notice that it's not 100%. So that is a conversation that I have with patients from the very beginning, so that we can discuss about how that, you know, is it going to be a benefit for you to know? And to start screenings potentially earlier, or and for your children or your grandchildren, is would it be a benefit for you to know this? Or is your mental health going to put you at a greater risk for knowing this information? And I think that's really important at the get-go with that conversation.
Yeah, and in some ways I would imagine for people, you're able to talk to them about lifestyle change, regardless of whether or not they're doing the testing, to say, okay, if you're concerned for your mental health and we're not going to do this testing, let's talk about ways that you can be preventative starting now, so that, you know, whatever the situation is, you're in a better place, and you are physically healthier as a result of what you're doing.
Yes. And let's still look at screenings, because if you have a strong family history of cancer, whether we test for genetics or not, maybe we start a colonoscopy earlier for you. Maybe you have several family members that had colon cancer before the age of 45 or under the age of 50 specifically. And then we look at, well, let's maybe look at starting a colonoscopy for you 10 years prior to that family history, that initial history of cancer in your family. So there are a lot of things we can do without even doing the genetic testing if they feel like mentally they can't tolerate that information.
What do you wish people understood about your role in healthcare?
I think, again, that it's a partnership, and that I think there's a lot of misconceptions about nurse practitioners in general. And I think nurse practitioners sometimes can put that forth as well, but I do work in partnership with the physician that I work with. I have an internal medicine doctor in my practice. And just today I have a patient who just got released from the hospital, and I had some questions, about information. And so I shot her a message and said, you know, what are your recommendations? And I'm able to get that information from her. So I think sometimes when people consider nurse practitioners, they think, well, I really want to see a doctor, I don't want to see a nurse practitioner. And just know that it is a partnership. But I think that it's really important for nurse practitioners to also be aware of our limitations. I didn't go to medical school. I chose not to go to medical school. I chose to be in the role that I'm in. And I love what I do. But I'm also not a doctor. And so it's important to know where those knowledge limitations are.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think that what you're talking about is forming a team, right, in which there are multiple members of the team and everybody has a role to fulfill in there. And as a result of that, you've got to make sure that no one is overstepping their bounds, but also no one is being left behind and not able to function to the full capabilities of the extent of their training and expertise. So a very interesting idea. What excites you about the future of healthcare?
I love the fact that insurance companies are finally catching up to the fact that preventing disease is far more cost effective than treating disease.
Yeah. So talk to me about that.
Well, so let's see, I've been a nurse practitioner since 1999. And I don't even know, maybe even 10 years ago, it was all about pushing for more patients, see more patients, see more patients, see more patients, see more patients. And it's not that that doesn't still exist in healthcare, because mm-hmm. there has to, you know, not even just big corporations, people have to survive, right? Even people have a misconception as well that medical, especially doctors, make a lot of money, and that's not the case. but what I've been able to see now is that my quality is just as important to the people that I work for as how many patients I see. Does that mean that I'm not going to hear about my productivity numbers? It doesn't mean I'm not going to hear about that. I potentially will, and that's still going to be there. Staff is involved in that. You know, your staff has jobs because of how many people that you're able to see in the office. It's just how it goes. But in addition to that, now my quality counts. And we see that because you're able to still maintain a business because the insurance companies are starting to reimburse based on quality as well and keeping people healthy.
Yeah. And I think that what you're talking about is kind of developing that fine balance between being timely or being expeditious with your time, as well as, you know, making sure that the patient is receiving what they need to feel confident as they leave, to feel like they're heard, and, you know, really that they, they're in a good place when they're leaving. And I would imagine that that also will have an impact on the way that they're feeling about their care plan. I mean, you know, because the statistics are out there about person and family-centered care and the results of that. You know, it lowers blood pressure, it shortens the duration of the common cold, those kind of things, which are incredible side effects of just making sure that the patient is where they need to be at the center of healthcare. So, fantastic. What is one thing medical professionals can start doing today to improve the quality of healthcare?
Listen to our patients. I will take it right back to that. I think the more we can listen to them and understand what their goals are for the health, the better we can bring them to the best state of health they can be in.
Okay. Do you have suggestions on how to do that? Are there questions that you should ask? What's your personal experience with improving your ability to listen to patients?
I think part of it is that I do let them take a little bit of a lead in a visit. So I initiate the visit with what are your main concerns today? I know we have lab results to go through today, but what are some of your top concerns for today? And I always end a visit then as well, asking a patient, so were we able to address your top concerns? How soon should we bring you back? If you feel like you have a lot more things on your list to talk about, you know, when do you want to come back? To make sure that we have that follow-up with them as well.
Okay, so it's you're hitting it at the beginning of the visit and you're hitting it at the end of the visit to say, what brings you in and did we address that? And if we didn't address it, I would imagine that there are two elements to that. If we didn't address it, you know, is this something that you need to, you know, is there something that didn't get addressed and therefore we need to talk about it immediately? Or is this something that can wait and we can talk about it when we bring you back in a little while?
That's exactly right. It's a classic thing that you'll hear from providers that will stand up at the end of a visit and say, you know, I'm so glad you came in today. And do you have any other concerns? And you have your hand on the doorknob and they say, oh, by the way, I've had chest pain for the last 3 days. And you're like, we should have had that in the lead.
Yes. Yeah.
Because you're going to turn around and you're going to go sit back down again. You don't walk out the door on that.
Right. Well, no doubt. And I think that those are, you know, the phrase for them is like, you know, doorknob confessions or whatever it is that there's something about the power of a practitioner putting their hand on the doorknob that brings out that thing that has been under the surface and didn't get said so far.
That's exactly right. And that relationship, developing that relationship with a patient, that's what I do. I did emergency medicine and I loved it for the time that I did it, but I do enjoy that relationship that I've established with all of my patients. So they can hopefully bring it up a lot sooner.
Right. Such an interesting thing that you're talking about with developing a relationship with patients. What a great way to approach healthcare. Listen, Denise Grzynski, thank you so much for being with me today. I appreciate you joining me, sharing your thoughts, and I truly respect your perspective on healthcare.
Thanks for listening to Perspectives on Healthcare. Visit perspectivesonhealthcare.com to learn more about Rob Oliver or to subscribe so you never miss an episode. If this podcast was valuable, we'd appreciate a review on iTunes. Or if you tell a friend or coworker about the show, that would be helpful too. Join us again next time for more Perspectives on Healthcare.